This is nice weather that everybody tells me. But in California, we would say it's a freezing weather. But there's a difference. And first I want to start, a spacecraft, as they call them, or saucers, or unidentified objects, have been coming and will be coming. And I think this year there's going to be more of them than there have been in the last few years, because they're going to be trying to impress the officials more than the necessity for the officials to acknowledge them to the world. But seeing them doesn't mean anything. You're like going to school and seeing a teacher and then not doing anything about what the teacher might have told them. You see him once and you see him again and again and you see the same thing and you learn nothing from him except that you saw him the second, third, and fourth time. But it's the message that it brings to us that once we employ the message in behalf of ourselves, it's where we get the help. Anybody can set a table up for people to eat, but the people must eat if they're going to profit by it. And this is the same thing in this case. It was said, my teachings, they are not my teachings. We have blended it with the understanding of the world, the way the world of people have been brought up. But the teachings are more cosmic or universal, as some people want to say or use that name. And they are for the benefit of each individual, regardless color, race, or belief. For it is the people. There's nothing wrong with the world itself. Even time of war, when a man goes insane and scars up the earth, in a few years the scars are mended and you wouldn't think there was a war in the territory at all. So the earth is all right and is capable of taking care of itself. Even when a man is insane and scars it up and ruins it in spots, it rebuilds itself. And this has happened many times. But you have a beautiful garden, you must tend to it. And you yourself must be beautiful in your thoughts to have that beautiful garden. Some people may live on a premise that have nothing in the way of beauty in their minds. And while the place could be beautified with little flowers here and something else there and so on, it looks like it's been neglected and all of that, and they're paying attention to the surrounding of the environment. And the same thing is with humanity. The world is beautiful. Even if we try to scar it up sometimes, the Creator himself replenishes and heals the scars, replenishes it with growth and one thing and another, and makes it beautiful again. And the same thing can be done with the individual. And the world will stay beautiful and continue that way because it's operated and governed by a natural law or the law of a creator, whatever that name you may give to that creator. Then for us to be as beautiful as the earth itself is, we have to comply with those laws as well. And no matter how many messengers will come this way, and now they call them prophets, call the space people prophets and all of that, and I mean some religious people like the organization Churches of Christ. They call them prophets now, which is a very nice name for them to be given. No matter how many will come, I don't think there was anything better or finer than the teachings that Jesus had left behind. And had we applied them, we as a society would have been a lot better people and less in danger than what we are today. Those words, but not apply them. And to apply them, you have to live them. Some people say, well, you can't live this kind of life that he taught, because you're in this kind of war. Well, you can't live it so long as you don't try it. You can live most anything that you want to live. And if you can live the harsh life that we have been going through, why, we can live the other as well, by applying it the other way. And even in these times, as things go on, and they're not easy sometimes to comply with, you even live it now in some ways. If a scientist in a turmoil and all of that can do the things that he's doing now, developing in the field of electronics as they are doing, even in so-called ignorant society in reference to the electronics, and he still goes ahead, then you surely can do the other as well as he's doing it if you only try to do it. Now it is for the community as a whole, which you should be also, is just as important, because when you make the community beautiful, you're living within the community, you benefit by it. You never work for yourself, you work for others all the time anyway, whether you like it or not. But even for oneself, if you were really selfish, it would be better to be selfish and do something beautiful than to not be selfish and live in so-called deprived situation. I've often said to a student that I had before, it is a lot better in the morning when you get up, no matter if you had a breakfast or not. Maybe you didn't have the money for the breakfast, didn't have nothing in the pantry or in the icebox. And you get outside there, and the lady and neighbor next door, or across the fence gossiping, they say, "Well, how are you, Mrs. Brown? How's things moving with you today?" Well, instead of saying that you didn't have any breakfast because you didn't have the money to buy it, and that your husband may be sick in bed and all of that, it'd be a lot better to tell a little fib by saying, "Well, things are moving fine. We're doing wonderful. Everything seems to be brightening up right along. It looks like we'll be out of the gutter with pretty soon." Because that lady will go to work and tell the next lady across the fence, the next lady, and there's about 50 in the community. Pretty soon you got 50 minds working in your behalf instead of against you if you tell them the other. And it won't cost you nothing. And it's all beautiful thoughts because everybody got a constructive thought. And are bound to create better conditions. And as we say, the space people brought to us some new knowledge in reference to ourselves and our relationship to our life. And unless we put it to work, it won't mean a thing. No matter how beautiful it is, like I said, no matter how beautiful this earth is, it don't mean a thing unless we begin to at least trying to be like that beauty is and comply with it and even make it more beautiful. Then it wouldn't mean nothing. So the spacecraft that people are interested in is not the answer to our betterment in this world, especially to the saving of the civilization. But the knowledge which they have given us, and also the knowledge of where we might just even destroy ourselves, and all of that through ignorance, is valuable. And that is the thing that we should really trying to do. And this Science of Life program that has been instituted mostly by them is for the purpose not only to make this world a better place to live in, but also a better being out of every individual that will study it. Every one of us know that even our Bible tells us, "Man, know thyself, and shall know all things." Man is a unit, the only unit in a form known that has the potential of his own creator, like nothing else has. And if he knows himself, he's naturally going to do a lot better by himself and by his fellow man. And the mysteries that he now lives I bet every one of you here could ask yourself, and I have maybe done so, saying, well, I know I'm living, I'm enjoying, although things could be better, and you wonder why they're not better, but you also wonder, what is it to this life? Is it that I'm living here and in the end, and what I learn means nothing? Where do I go from here? And what is the purpose really of me living? Today, man lives like if he was in a dream. I know I catch myself at that point a lot of times. The whole process of living and where you have to struggle because the society is clean out of order, against working as a family, they work against one another. It looks like it's a worthless effort and a waste of life. And living here, no matter how much we learn, it still feels that way. We're a mystery to ourselves. Naturally, the other fellow is going to be a mystery to us as well, in our life as well. But once we understand ourselves, since the potential, the instruments, are within us, to understand and know why for life, and what life is, then we should try to develop that within ourselves. Take for an example, one phase of human mind, a human being, and that is his mind. He would not have a mind if it wasn't for the senses. The senses and mind are one and the same thing. It's through the senses that he observes, like sight. It's through the sense of hearing that he hears sound, sense of smell and taste and go down the line. If he didn't have them, he would know nothing, not very much about life as he sees it. But all these are so-called concrete manifestation, as man calls them. And he adheres to them because he himself is a effect of a cause. That he had learned well as an effect, and he hangs on to other effects to make sure that he's being. And he calls that concrete. But every concrete form, regardless what it be, has a cause behind it. And the cause has a reason for it being. And unless he lends himself to the cause, he shall not know himself. And then when he once learns the cause of his being, the thing called concrete, then he'll learn the real thing, which is back of everything in a way of creating different forms, including the earth itself. Go back to the senses now. We find, and you probably have heard me state this once before, you may see the most gorgeous flower. One that you have never seen through the span of your life. This is the first time you look, your eyes are casted upon this flower. It's delicate, beautiful in the structure, in its color, and it captures your sight. And you almost want to worship it. You think it was God himself expressing through that flower, which it is. So you worship it. Then the sense of smell comes along and it says, I want to smell it. You glory over this flower so much, I then want to smell it. You're like two different people. And you smell it. And it smells like a polecat. The sense of smell wants to get away and don't want to have nothing to do with it. Nothing. While the sense of sight wants to caress it, wants to keep it, wants to preserve it. There's a battle going on right there in your mind. You are torn between two things. And the other senses do the same thing. And vice versa, they go back and forth, and seesaw back and forth. It's no wonder that we only live 60, 70, or 80 years, and then we kick out. dissenters are really tearing the body to pieces. There's never been any harmony in a case like that, which is necessary if the body is going to continue on living. This is something that the space people do not have. They have cultivated that sense mind in a way that they coordinate each senses. But you've got to have an understanding to coordinate the senses then, so they may work as a unit and rather than as strangers or individuals of different opinions and begin to fight one another. Because while that fight does go on, you know, you can have the most beautiful building that may stand up for 1,000 years. But if you put people in there that keep fighting in that building all the time, throwing dishes and rocks and everything else within that building, you're not going to have a building very long. And that's what's really going on in your mind right now, in that body. Even science tell you that you have a body right now that if you knew how to take care of it, could go on for 1,000 years, or 500 years in this world, while they live 5,000 years on other planets. That same kind of a body, no different than yours. So then we must admit there's something wrong with our teachings in the past and the present, that we do not keep this body as we could. And then the question comes up, well, would I want a body to last 500 years and be just dragging myself around? Well, if you lived right, the prime of life probably would be around 250 years. Don't forget, you're just as good, and your body just as good as Adam's body was. And he got set at 900 and some odd years of age. So he was still a man enough to get an offspring. And we quit here at 45 or 60, we no longer can do anything. Look at the fun you're missing out and everything else. All because you haven't learned how to take care of your body. And they have on the other planets. This is why, for their long life. So it behooves a man to begin to study himself. He'll buy a machine like this recording machine. He'll buy an automobile, many other things, even a stove and a sink in the house. And he wants to learn all about it. That in case something goes wrong, he knows how to take care of it. Yet the most precious thing in the world is his own being, the body within which he lives. And he learns nothing of it. Instead of that, he tears it to pieces long before it is ready to go into the dirt. And that's what the science of life really deals with. To show you, you have somewhere around 9 billion cells in your mind, in your brain, they're called. How many of us know how many of those cells are working? According to the best information that can be gotten, and more or less on a guess, because I don't know of any scientist that ever gone in there and really seen the operation of those cells, but a speculation at least, just about 10% of them are in working, and the best man today, that's the best developed man in the field of knowledge. There's 90% yet to be developed. And if a man like scientists and electronics that can be here on Earth and repair a job 6-7 million miles away from the Earth, he's really far ahead of a lot of people. And if he can do that with a 10% development of his brain cells, what is he going to be like when he develops 100% and get them all in the operation? He will really represent the Creator, definitely. There's no question about it. So you see, we got a long ways to go. And it doesn't, this process doesn't belong to a scientist alone. It belongs to every living creature as a man on this earth. Every man has the potential. Because every man has an offspring of this one great Creator that rules the unlimited or the eternal space. I say eternal because there's no end to it. If there was an end, Then you'd have to admit that that end must be supported by something else that is far greater than the end itself. And you keep on going that way. Every time you would come to some so-called end, something else is supporting it. So you really cannot find any ending to it. And the beginning, how are you going to know where the beginning was if there was any at all? It is something that we don't quite grasp as yet. But if there was a beginning at all, then there would be an end or a central point from which you could measure from the edge to the center. And we have no such a measurement. So all we're living a life of theory. We're moving along according to the speculation angle, be it in one form of teachings or any kind of teachings. And each day, those ideas change. And it's unfortunate sometimes that some ideas are perpetuated for days and months and years, and they become habitual. So eventually the humankind becomes a habit. He moves by habit. He no longer thinks for himself, as he should be thinking, or he should. Oh, we're made to think. In order that today, all you have to do, most of you may be against the war, not a war. But they can start drumming up and trumping up a lively tone to work up your emotions, and before you know, you're marching behind them without a second thought as what it's all about. You ask no questions. Emotionally, you're moved. Why, any one of us, tell you the truth, any one of us could go to work and put up a new kind of cereal that wouldn't be worth to feed a dog with. When we got some money, we're going to make some money because they take advantage of the public. When we get the cereal on the market, all we have to do is advertise it on TV and say that Hopalong Cassidy is using it. And the child comes around to the mother and father and says, when you go to the store, buy me some of this new cereal. And you'll be buying it. And later on you find out it wasn't worth the time to think about it, not alone to buy it, but the fellow's already made a couple of $1 million. You follow the habit that's been perpetuated for you to follow. You seldom think for yourself. So we have become sort of zombies rather than the real human beings. We're afraid of change because we don't know what the change is going to be like. Is it going to be better or worse than what we had? No matter how bad the conditions are, we like to hang on to them because the next step that we might take that we still don't know what it's going to be might not be as good. And you overlook one thing in that case, because each step is a step forward. Must be better. Because nature doesn't retrograde. Doesn't go backwards, it goes forward. Always for the betterment. Always for better expression. So you can see here that we have much to learn and no religion is involved. In fact, if you place it someplace where this belongs, you might say it's purely a scientific procedure. Just as much science in the human being as they are anything else. He's a mystery to himself, and he is a mystery to everyone else. But once he is analyzed, and all his component parts are analyzed, and where they fit in, and how they work, or how they're supposed to work with each other, he's no longer a mystery, and then he can move as a full manifestation, fulfilling its purpose for which it was created. And this is where the space people are so far ahead of us, because they have taken that time. Instead of learning about the automobile, which is necessary, and other things, they came first. They're trying to learn all about themselves. And this was, you might say, independent of a creator. Let me say here, we're moving in space. You know, Galileo moved into space with the first telescope. And because he didn't find God, where God's supposed to have been, he was right away criticized, condemned by the church of the day. Now we're going even further. We're going to other planets and probably explore the whole system. All the plans are within it. And then we'll go probably to other systems. And no matter how far we'll go, the type of a god that's been promoted to us, we will not find. But what will we find? We've got that yet to face. Yet, you would say, then in this case, the people won't believe in God, as we've been taught got to be. I will say that they will believe more than ever, because they have learned. There are forces out there, intelligent expressions out there, that is all beyond us at present day. And they must admit that matter cannot fashion itself onto a form, or the essence of matter cannot become a matter until something guides it, and so down the line, unless there's some form of intelligence that is really directing it, regardless what you call it. So seeing that, they'll become real, you might say, believers, instead of believing because it is right to believe, because society believes so. They will be facing it face to face. Take, for instance, Luther Burbank. Most of you heard of him. I met him. He done wonders for the society in the vegetable kingdom. And he was asked one day by a newspaper, with a minister being present, did he believe in God? He says, believe in God? I work with God every day. I talk to him. Because he said that, the papers took it up and published him as an atheist. And it got so bad, it hurt the old man so hard, he couldn't take it. Minister in San Francisco, one of the biggest congregations there, asked him to come to the church and speak from the pulpit that he may correct the impression that the papers give to the public. He did. First the minister spoke, he did. Still didn't do no good. And because he was so accused of false accusations, he couldn't take it. A lot of people can't. It takes a pretty strong man to stand up against the opposition. And a man must be very well convinced of the truth he has to be able to take it. Because he wasn't quite that strong, he died of a heart failure, what they call a heart failure. He could have been serving even today. And yet, did he say anything false? Not at all. He said the absolute truth. Society did not come forth this far without being taught by nature. Let us go back a little bit. In the field of music, for an example, which is a good example, far better than a lot of others, I would say, for us to grasp, the man probably never seen an instrument, the first man on earth, let us say. Never seen an instrument. But he heard the wind whistling through the trees. Was it through bare trees, it produced one sound. When the trees had leaves on, it produced another sound. The intensity of the wind would also change the sounds. Then the type of leaves. Pine trees, needles, would produce a still another sound, so down the line. Sounded pretty well to him, so he tried to imitate. Simplest thing he could make at the time was a whistle, because a lot of times you can go down in the spring of the year and take a willow even, growing pretty good sized stick, and cut it, and kind of knock the bark around a little bit so you don't mesh it too much, and you can slide it off and make a whistle out of it. See? And then he heard the birds singing. All kinds of different noises, trying to put them together, make harmony out of them. Who taught them? There were no teachers, there were no schools. I don't mean now that I'm against them, but there were no teachers then, no schools. Who taught them to do all these things? Who teaches the animal that has no school to go to? Nature. She's the mother of all creation. we got away so far from a natural source of ourselves and that that brought us into being that we know nothing about it anymore. Take, for instance, when I was on Mount Palomar there, living on the slopes of Palomar, the Indians around there usually turn their hogs out with their little ones, because there are a lot of acorns there, and they can feed on that when the acorns start falling from the trees. And here's a sow going with her whole brood and picking up these acorns. And a big greyhound bus come in there, and these are all older people, anything from 20 up to 80, men and women. They look at that sow going up there and all these little fellas following there, and they says, "Mr. Adamski, why are those rabbits chasing that pig?" Just imagine, it would be different if the young kids were brought up in the city and never seen a hog. But these are old people. So you see how far we ventured out from our mother. And I say mother because our mother Earth is our mother. If she quit producing the food that we eat, we wouldn't be here. And no matter how hostile you get to it, or how badly you mired up or scarred up, she's still feeding us, and every other creature too, regardless whether we give her thanks or not. She asks for nothing but to give plenty. Had never weaned us from her breast. And she knows exactly how to produce that better than man. Man can help and get a better production, that's true. But she knows how to start it where man didn't know. He learned from it. So there's a very simple way, wonderful school, school of eternity, school that been before schools came. And the schools that came were created because of her. Geologist goes in there, studies the structure of Earth. Astronomer goes up there, studies the sky, and trying to find out, he hasn't got as good access to his study as the geologist where he could actually work with it. Another fellow with the plant life, animal life, and down the line. And then we set up schools, and we lose the teacher. Because we no longer, after that, pay attention to this Mother Earth that taught us in the first place to have set up the school, because everybody can't go out there in the field study. We didn't concentrate on the school and forget all about that mother that taught us how to start the school and what to start with. And unless we get back there, we're going to be a lost race. No question about it. That's why the great book says, the natural man knows the ways of the spirit. The unnatural man knows not the way of the spirit. And we became quite unnatural. Habitual zombies living on Earth, moving about, pushing each other around. Half the time we don't know what for. All you have to do goes to city, on Broadway or any one of those heady thoroughfares where the stores are. I don't know what I got to do. Go downtown. You go downtown, you start knocking each other back and forth, going someplace you don't know where you're heading for, and a lot of times you get in a store and buy something that you didn't intend to buy. So you see, that's how far off the beam we are. So it's about time we try to learn something about ourselves and learn just what we are, who we are, and what purpose we're here for. But we'll have to go back to the natural cause that is responsible for you and I and in all life. Take a little more interest there and study. Because no matter how much or how far we'll go, we will still have to go through nature for the 99% of our existing life. We'll have to depend on that. We can live independent of it. But if we don't go do better than that, most of us will be cracking our heads up against a stone wall, which we're doing in right now. Our scientists could do a lot better in the present endeavor if they took nature into consideration as a partner of their growth. But they overlooked that now because they've been taught by nature. Now they left nature behind. I know all the answers now. I don't need you no more. They'll be needing that nature to guide them on through life, every moment of life. The word nature sounds kind of simple, but in reality, it's the manifestation of a creator. And who would know better than the creator what's to be done and which way to go and the reason for your being? He surely must know, whoever that creator is, for he created everything for a reason or a purpose. So we call it nature, and well, it's the only common thing. Just like, for instance, what's the most precious thing on the face of the earth, and yet given free, found free, than most all of the earth? And yet it's more precious than all the gold in the world, all the precious jewels in the world, or anything that you might classify as precious. Even more precious than you and I. And that's so plentiful in most places. We don't pay attention. We waste it, we pollute it, we do all sorts of things to it. Abuse it. What is that thing? Huh? It's water. Without that water, nothing could live or be what it is today. The simplest things are the most precious things. And who gives it to us? Who gives us the most precious, not second precious thing, without which the earth itself couldn't live? And we call that air. The air we breathe. And that's free. Ask no questions to who you are, what you are, what color, what your beliefs, good, bad, or indifferent. But it lends itself to all creatures alike. And ask for no thanks. If man could really harness it, then you might find some kind of computer on your nose, and according to the numbers of the gallons that you inhaled and exhaled, you'll be paying for it. Well, thank God they can't do that yet. But that man would do it if he had a way of doing it, just as he has harnessed a lot of things the same way. But without these simple things, they are very simple, you and I wouldn't be here. And the Creator's way is very simple. The reason why it looks complicated to us, because we have complicated our own society. We make one mistake, we try to cover it up with another, and keep covering those mistakes up till finally we don't know which end is which and how to get out of the trap. That's just where the society is today. When the society gets that way, well, there's only one thing that somebody really going to try to save something and at the same time destroy the whole works. By pushing the wrong button. So it behooves the man to go back to nature, study it, because she's your mother. The effects are, again, the cause of a creator. He's the cause of all this creation, and we are the effects. But within us lies something greater than the effect. In religion, it's called a soul. The spirit, call it what you will. Labels are confusing oftentimes and not truly revealing the true nature of one. But whatever it is, whatever you may name it, you must admit there is something there bigger than your eyes, in your senses, than yourself, as you appear to others. Let me bring that to your attention on this ground, which proves itself. You don't need no proof, any other, but that. All you have to stop that whirling mind of yours, settle down for one moment, and tell me, or tell yourself, what happens to the food you put down into your stomach? Your mind doesn't know it, all the senses. Sure, they saw the carrot, it was a good looking soda, it chewed it up. See? And the taste, smell, tasted of some food, maybe some different kind of spicing, it liked it, it ate it. But it doesn't know what's going to happen to that when it gets down there in your body. But there is an intelligence there that is beyond your mind, far greater than your mind is at present, that does know what to do. If it didn't, brother, it would be in a hell of a mess. And yet that mind, the senses of yours, can interfere with it. And it does sometimes. You get angry, mad or tense, mentally disturbed, eat the best kind of food. And I'll bet you in 20 minutes, you'll be running for soda. That particular intelligence down there in your body, which is independent of your own mind, will not work with the distorted conditions, but it'll make that mind suffer for this distortion that it produced. Because the body is not aching, it's your mind knows all of that, see? You're alerted mentally to the unpleasant condition existing in your body. So it makes you pay. On the other hand, if you're really in perfect harmony, happy-go-lucky sort of character, you could eat Carpetax for tender meat and never know that you ate it. See, it works only in harmony, with harmony. So the pains and sicknesses and all of that are brought about by our own distortion, mental distortion, in most cases. See? Then we take another phase of it.